when 3N gets big enough, I'm sure they'll play music after they announce your name, like in baseball or UFC. What song would you want them to play for you?
Well, let me think. Another One Bites the Dust. There you go. They'll be for my competition.
Nice.
Right?
Welcome to the 3-Gun Show, Episode 2. I'm your host, Dave Hartman. Our featured guest on this episode is 2013 3-Gun Nation National Champ, Keith Garcia. Before we get into the interview, I want to thank you for downloading and listening to this episode. The 3-Gun Show is a weekly podcast dedicated to the awesome sport of 3-Gun. Each week, I will be bringing you a new episode featuring an awesome athlete, manufacturer of multi-gun-specific products, and sometimes both. If you like the show, please tell a friend, subscribe in iTunes, and leave us a review. In fact, I'm running a contest for those that leave a review in iTunes. Be sure to listen after the show for details on the prizes and how to enter. In this interview, Keith tells us about the 50 challenges that he teaches in his 3-day 3-gun classes, how he got started in 3-gun, and what the 3-gun Nation Western Regional match looked like this year. Everything we talk about can be found in the show notes at 3gunshow.com/episode2. And now, please join me in welcoming Keith Garcia.
Keith, thank you for joining me on the 3-Gun Show.
Pleasure. I'm happy to be here. It's a pleasure to help you out. I know you're just getting started, and I wish you the best and success with your new podcast.
Excellent. Thank you, Keith. So, briefly, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself personally? I know a lot of times people get wrapped up in what they see on television or on, you know, social media and stuff like that. So who is Keith Garcia off the range?
Well, off the range, I've been a police officer for the last 23 years. I'm in Northern California. For about 12 years of that, I was a SWAT team leader, and I've done a lot of training in police and military stuff, and, you know, just have a couple kids and have a busy schedule where I try and fit in my passion for 3-gun.
Awesome. How do you find that work, or I guess play and life balance works out for you?
You know, it was really hard at the beginning to try and travel and get away and shoot and balance the home life with the my daughter plays competitive softball, my daughter takes kung fu, we got school, we got, you know, working and teaching and everything else. So it was real tough to kind of balance it out, but it got easier as time went on, and I do, you know, a lot of my training is dry fire routine at home, shooting airsoft, et cetera. So it's the bulk of the travel and time away is actually going to matches or going to teach classes. So you just strike a balance. You have to make deals and you know, be nice to everybody and make sure that, you know, everybody knows that, you know, there's priorities in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's probably one of those important things would be having the support of the family and stuff like that as well. So got to keep them happy.
I agree completely. Nothing happens without everybody being happy.
That's true. I would like to ask you about like your foray into 3-gun. I've, you know, read a little bit about you studying up before our interview here. Understand that you've been shooting 3-gun, that is, since 2008. Is that true?
Well, you know, I actually shot my first 3-gun match in 2004, but there's a funny story behind it. I hadn't shot any, and I decided to go with a couple of buddies who were also cops, who were also on my SWAT team, and we had done a bunch of SWAT competitions. So, you know, we would shoot 6 guns in the SWAT competition, the ones we'd go to over the years, and they're real physical and stuff. And we thought, oh, it's only 3 competitions? Or am I only 3 guns? And, oh, this will be easy. So we went to the USPSA 3-gun National Championships were held in Reno that year, not too far away. And I'd been to the range before, and I thought, you know what, let's go do that. How hard could it be? Let's just go jump in there and see how it goes. And when I got there, it was a huge eye-opener. I finished way, way, way back in the pack just trying to figure out how to do it. It was really windy at the range, and that made the long range really difficult to deal with, and even some of the handgun shots and certainly the shotgun slugs, and it was a disaster. I left there really knowing that I knew nothing about 3-gun at that point, And I saw some guys shoot, like Mike Voigt, Taren Butler, Jerry Mitchell. And I thought, wow, those guys are good. I got to watch them shoot, and I learned a ton. And I said, I'm going to go back and really study this stuff, practice it, get better gear. And the next time I shot a USPSA Nationals was in 2008, and I actually finished second.
Oh, nice. That's a good way to make up for the first match there. So did you happen to think like, it's the Nationals, you know, maybe there's gonna be some stiff competition, or was it just I got this?
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. I just thought, honestly, with the amount of shooting that we had done prior to that, and we had done a lot of competitions, they were strictly law enforcement, which is the problem, the trap that kind of cops and military guys get into. They start thinking that because they're doing well in this small pool of shooters who all kind of do the same kind of training and have the same kind of tactics, that they think they're good. And at the end of the day, they're really not very good when it comes to really shooting and moving dynamically and shooting fast and accurately. Our law enforcement military is traditionally way behind the pack. So when people show up a lot of times for their first match, they get overwhelmed by how fast people really are. And most of the best shooters in the world are civilians. Let's face it. They go out, they have the passion for it. They spend their own money, their own time. It's a hobby. They love it and they really enjoy it. Where, you know, people in police and military fields, they carry the gun because they have to, and they go to the training because they have to. And some get very good. Now, you know, in the last 10 years, I can say that there's been a big movement of advancement in law enforcement military training from the guys in the AMU helping out the military guys, and then guys in law enforcement really stepping it up. But, you know, at the time, you know, when you go to your first match and you see the civilians, the dentist, the doctor, the veterinarian, you know, crushing you on every stage, it's kind of humbling. So you really want to, a lot of guys will stop going because they get humiliated. And then the few that don't say, hey, you know, I really need to train. And they become much better at their job because of it. They become much safer in law enforcement or as a military personnel because they're utilizing their skills and getting better, protecting themselves and others. So that's the one thing I really took away from my first experience in 2004 was I need to get better. And if I can be better at this, then I can be better in my job.
I like how you approach that is, you know, you came away from it rather than like, you know, screw this, I'm never going to do this again. I'm embarrassed to, you know, I this is awesome. I want to get better. How did you make that decision? And then did you come up with a plan from there or did you just dive in?
Well, you know, I actually took a class from Mike Voigt. Right after that, he came to a range that was near me in Richmond, California. And he came to teach a three-gun class. And when I saw that, I'm like, hey, I'm signing up for that class. Because to be honest with you, if you want to learn and you want to get better, you need to go to somebody who knows what they're doing. And we'll show you and as a good instructor. And when you do that, it really, you know, lowers the learning curve for you. It isn't so steep. And they give you the spoon feed you the, you know, what to do and how to do it. And then you just go, it's on you to go back and practice. So I really enjoyed the sport. I really enjoyed the practice. So once I got the correct information, I was able to go back and figure out what worked for me and apply that in my training. And then my training would cross over into my actual shooting and competition. And it was great. And I really just really enjoyed it. And that's why I kept it up.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, taking a classes from someone who knows and who's been there really does flatten the learning curve. And I think once we get out of school, people forget that. Like we, you know, when we're little, we learn to read from someone who can read, right?
Yep, exactly.
But then we get older and get ego and forget all that. But yeah, there's gold in there.
Oh, I can't agree more. I started teaching classes a few years ago because I really think that if you break the stuff down, and my motto is that champions are made in practice, and I break down everything, and I say, look, I'm going to teach you what and how to practice. And I over a three-day class, I give people about 50 different challenges with the handgun, shotgun, and with the rifle, and say, look, these things, if you master these things, you will go to any match in the country and go, I know how to do this. I can do this because I've done it before. And you've got that. There's a challenge there. You've done it. You mastered it. You, at least you know what to do. You have an explanation. You have something in your head. You have a framework to work from, and you won't get overwhelmed. Because sometimes, you know, matches throw in some weird stuff. And if you practice these like 50 drills, 50 skills, learn them, you won't be intimidated by anything you see.
That's great advice. Keith, want to move on and chat with you a little bit about your gear here, but first, I got to ask you, six gun competition, what is that? I've never heard of that.
Well, SWAT competitions now. These things are crazy. There's one in particular, best in the West. It's out in California, and it's hosted by the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Department. And you would shoot a sniper rifle. You'd shoot a 308 semi-auto gun, a 223 semi-auto gun, an MP5, your handgun, a shotgun, a less lethal gun, and you'd have to go through these courses and do. There's about seven different courses of fire, I think three of them were individual and four were team events. And, you know, it'd be crazy stuff like, hey, we're going to go run this obstacle course. Then you're going to shoot one shot here and one shot there and one shot there. And, you know, once you're just about ready to puke, you get to drop down and take these shots. And you get one shot. And if you miss it, it's a 5-minute penalty. You know, the whole team is crushed, stuff like that. Yeah, so it's totally different from what we do. It was very challenging. It was you know, a lot of fun to train for, and a lot of, you know, real good camaraderie and great teammates. But to be honest with you, you didn't get to do much shooting. And what was fun to me, though, during that time was I started my competition shooting towards the end of my SWAT training stuff, and I got good real quick with the competition stuff and went to the SWAT competitions, and there were big name departments from all over, from Texas and West, that would come, and I was able to win the individual event, or, you know, individual events against officers from, you know, much larger full-time SWAT teams, and it just showed me that, you know, this competition stuff really worked, because I know these guys, that's all they do is they were full-time SWAT members in big departments, and they train, and they would do a lot of ops. But when it came right down to shooting and doing these events that simulated, you know, stuff we would do in real life, but incorporated high stress and shooting, then I was able to beat them. So I just figured out that the competition stuff really does help. It helps in our everyday work, and it was a real benefit.
Oh, I'd imagine, you know, in your line of work, like, the best case scenario is you never pull the trigger, right?
It is. So if you can actually, you know, avoid having to get in a shooting, you're 110% better than the guy who did, because now he's got to go through a lot of fallout, no matter how clean the shooting is, no matter how good you did. You know, you've had the moral and intestinal fortitude to do your job, like we've seen in the news recently with people who've done their job, done well, they're still crucified. So if you can avoid having to do it because you have better tactics or better skill or whatever, yeah, not to criticize anybody who has had to, because there's many cases where they couldn't avoid it, and they've done their job and they've done it well, but it's obviously a very traumatic experience and a lot of fallout, so better to avoid it if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Keith, I want to switch gears completely here and talk to you about your gear setup.
Okay.
Tell us about your 3-gun rifle.
Okay,
let me back up just one quick second. Tell us what division you run in, and then tell us about the rifle.
Okay, so the division, I usually shoot in TAC Optics, which is called Practical Division for 3-Gun Nation, and every other match it's usually Tactical Optics, which means basically you run a rifle with one optic, and everything else has to be iron sights. So for that, my rifle, I will run. I have shot heavy metal before, but it's not my favorite division. I've done it on occasion where you shoot a 308, and I have a JP Enterprises rifle, and it's a great rifle, shooting 110 grain, you know, VMAX ammo from Hornady. It feels like a 223. It's an amazing gun. But generally, what I'll shoot is a 223 caliber AR-15, and it's a combo rifle between JP Enterprises and Terran Tactical Innovations, and it's I have a 14.5-inch, I have a 16-inch, and I have an 18-inch for I go to different matches, like the professional series and 3-Gun Nations. Everything's close; it's 50 yards in it. So I'll use my 14.5-inch gun because I don't need to stretch it out. But if I'm going to go shoot targets, you know, between the, let's say, 250 to 350, then I'll take the 16-inch. And when we go out past 350, then I'll take the 18-inch gun. And that way I get a little more velocity in the rounds, and I know where they're going to hit more consistently. Not to say that the shorter barrels can't reach out there. It's just for me personally, I've seen it be a little bit better for me. On that gun, I will run a Swarovski Z6i 1-6 adjustable scope with their BDC reticle, and it's got a great dot. It's about as bright as you can get. Huge field of view. It's like looking through your front window, and I really find that that's a huge advantage for me. I wore a scope mount on there because scope mounts are huge, and it's so important to get one that's really, really, really secure. I've seen people on the range go to war on a long range stage because two stages back we had to throw our rifle in a dump bucket, and they got their scope dinged up, and it moved. It actually moved in the mount. So when that happens, it's not a good sight. It's not pretty. You look through your scope and you see the crosshairs are twisted and stuff, and it doesn't It isn't helpful on long range stage. So I go with a really good solid mount. I don't go with the hey, let me get a quick release mount because I don't want it to quickly release ever. Okay, I don't want to be able to take my mount off unless I choose to do it with a wrench. And I want to tighten it down. I want it to stay right where it's at. And I want to be happy that it's there. And a quick story, back 2 years ago when they first started the very first professional series match that Three Gun Nation did, I flew to Florida to shoot it. And, you know, our guns get banged up quite a bit in travel through the airports. So I get there, I look at the stages of fire, I go to sight in, and I found that my pistol grip on my gun was broken. The spine in the back of the grip was actually snapped from being beat up so much on the travel that when I grabbed it, it was loose and it would twist in my hand. And I thought, oh boy, I wonder what happened to my zero, because I want to confirm my zero. And I shot, didn't move at all, and I went on to win that match the next day. So I was really, really happy with that. The scope is great. The mount is great. The rifle's great. I can't say enough. Just so we're on the same page, I also run some iron sights as backups, not that the scope's going to go down, but because, you know, sometimes we're shooting at distance, we have magnification, then we want to shoot close, then we shoot back out at distance. So I have some of the Duke Defense offset sights. Yeah, they're iron sights. Okay. They kind of sit sideways on the gun, and you just twist them a little bit. And I've incorporated those in my duty gun as well at work because I run a red dot, and I tell you, the weirdest thing to me is when people run flip-up sights. It's like, okay, what point of the fight, when you figured out that your red dot isn't working anymore, do you have time? Because usually if you're going to figure out that your dot isn't working, it's probably in a bad time. Or if it goes down, it's a really bad time. I don't want to stop right there and go ahead and flip up some sights. I want them ready. I want them ready to go. I want to shoot right now. And I did some training with Barry Duke sights, and I'd be on target with the dot and then transition to the sights in about 1 second to the backup sights to get hits out to 25 yards. So no muss, no fuss. You don't have to flip anything up. You don't have to do anything. It's the way to go. In terms of stocks for the AR, I got a new featherweight stock that's an adjustable cheek rest, because one of the things I think is really huge is that every time you mount the gun, that you look straight down the center of it. And I teach this in my classes, and I'll harp on it to the day I go out of this sport, is when you mount the gun, you should be able to mount it as hard and aggressively as you can every time and look straight down the center of the scope. If you have to adjust your head to find the center of the scope because your cheek is too low, then you're wasting time. And it really hurts you when you go prone to go shoot long shots, because you'll get parallax and it really doesn't work well. So I went to an adjustable stock. So you can adjust the length of the pole, and you can adjust the cheek piece up and down, so you can look directly down the center of the scope every time. And Royal Arms started carrying this one particular adjustable stock, and it's the featherweight, and it doesn't weigh any more than the Magpul stock I was running, but it has a real consistent head position for me. And once I got it adjusted, didn't need to move it, and I throw it in dump buckets and do all could travel with it, and it just keeps staying in the same spot, and it's real helpful for me.
Oh, that's awesome. Where on your face do you index that? Do you have like a certain spot each time? Like, I know I need to grab down here, squish up my cheek.
Yeah, I will set it up so when it's shouldered, I push all the way down until I feel like I can't push any further on my cheekbone. I set up that stock so I push hard down with my head, so it's the same place every time. Now, you know, I see people floating their head all around, and maybe it's more comfortable for them, but When I index the gun, I push really aggressively down with my head. So I have to force my cheek down into the correct position, so it's the same place every time.
Awesome. And so you mentioned that the stock is also an ultralight stock, and you also mentioned the 14.5-inch gun that you use for the Bay Stages and Three Gun Nation.
Uh-huh.
It seems like there's a trend of going to super light rifles in Three Gun Nation, and
absolutely.
Wondering if you could comment on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, Taren Tactical put together, Taren Butler, Taren Tactical Innovations, put together a 14.5-inch upper for me that has magnesium forend from Bravo Company, and it is, I mean, it's so light, it's ridiculous. He made it, didn't use an adjustable gas block, just made a real tiny gas port, so it's just enough to cycle a bolt. And with my JP captured silent spring, it runs just enough juice to cycle a gun every time, make it perfectly reliable, but there's no extra recoil. And it's really, really light. So when you're, because the transitions and the, you know, picking the gun up and dumping it is real, real important in these matches, because there's not much time to be, you can't waste any time. So honestly, the lighter the better, as long as there isn't a ton of recoil, because some guys will say, oh, I'll just get this lightweight upper, and then they don't have it set correctly. So it basically just jumps all around on when they shoot, and you can't have that. You have to have it set up so, you know, it cycles a bolt, but it doesn't give you too much recoil, and the correct balance, stance, and grip on the gun will keep it on target, so you can shoot rapid shots, you know, in that 25 to 50 yard range, and get, you know, your hits on target, where other guys, you'll either get a miss or they have to recover and let the gun settle back down before they can shoot the second shot.
And so when we're watching you on television and you're doing the shoot off, that's mm-hmm. the gun that you're shooting?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And do you find any sort of difficulty or quirks in switching back and forth between each of those three guns?
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, the lower, I'll keep set up the same on all of them, and I'll just change the uppers. So the trigger, the Timney trigger that I'm using, is the same trigger. The bolt, you know, the magazine release, everything's in the same size, same place, and I set them up all the same. So the only thing that's different now is that you're going to have a few inches on the barrel, and it gives a little more weight sometimes at the end, but in terms of adjustable stock, the head position, the same scope, they're all set up the same. So the only difference is one's going to weigh a little bit more than the other.
Nice. I like the keeping it, you know, across the board, nice and even and consistent. That's good.
Absolutely. I agree. I think consistency will keep your accuracy up, and it will keep the, when under stress, when you have to really perform, when there's people watching, when there's money on the line, you know, you've got the buzzer going off, you're competing against somebody else, you want to be able to be consistent. And even when you're stressed a little bit, run that gun at your, you know, 95 to 98% of your capability without crashing and burning. And I think having a consistent setup will help you do that.
That's good. You know, I actually kind of ran into an embarrassing thing, and actually I have a lot of embarrassing three gun stories now I think about it, but I was on a stage and my rifle was just not extracting the the spent round consistently all day, and it was, you know, a local match. It was just a Saturday, pay $20 and help set up type thing. So everyone was real cool, and they're like, well, you know, why don't you go to the back of the pack and see if you can borrow a gun. So I borrowed my buddy's like JP rifle, and we had this ridiculous hoser stage that required a mag change, and it was, you know, short bay, but I shoot in limited, he shoots in tac ops, so I was trying to use his duck defense backup sights, and then I tried to figure out a mag pull bad lever on a Glock, having never even used one before. So yeah, when it counts, knowing what all the buttons do and all that stuff is, yeah, that's very important.
Oh, absolutely. And that's going back to those 50 challenges I was talking about that go on, that I teach people, you know, the manipulation of the guns. You know, I believe you break it down into shooting, weapon manipulation, and transitions. And that weapon manipulation and transitions, people tend to really do, they don't harp on them. They don't practice the basics. They go out and shoot, but they don't really work on the taking care of their guns. They don't worry about keeping them fed, you know, keeping them running. And that's when things really fall apart, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know a lot of guys that practice mag changes in a rifle. You know, I've got 30 rounds in there, 40 rounds in there, whatever it is. So,
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, you know, I was at a match this weekend where you had to do an unloaded start and everything had to be on the table with your rifle. And I saw probably six people in our squad of, four people out of the eight dropped the mag on the ground when they tried to load it.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. It's bolt forward, so guys, they're not used to, they fill up the mag and then the mag isn't going to seat, and it's just all kinds of craziness and mayhem ensues. So a lot of these little things you got to practice and think of ahead of time so you know, hey, let me take a couple rounds out of this magazine so it goes in easier, and that way I can load it on the fly, because rifles aren't easy to load.
No, and yeah, when I do the same thing, I've got, like two rounds I have to take out of each magazine to be able to get that magazine to seat properly in my rifle. And, I've had other rifles that it's not the case, but the one I currently shoot, yeah, definitely got to download a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen it where you could run 31 rounds in a mag and it worked fine. There's plenty of room because the gun's kind of sloppy. And then other ones where if you went, you had to go 28 because it just wouldn't fit. And, most of us run a Magpul mag or, and I use Tier and Tackle base pads to add a few rounds on. So it gives you a little bit more room at the top. But it's important to get a technique. It's important to practice the technique. So again, under stress, when the quarters of a second count, that you're consistent with it.
Yeah. And speaking of technique, I've seen a bunch of videos of you learning the quad load recently, and that's kind of a new thing for you this year, right? You switched up your loading method?
Yes, absolutely, and I'm glad you asked about that, because for years, I learned from Taren Butler years ago, hey, this is that 2004 when I went to use the USPSA Nationals, I saw him loading. I'm like, wow, he's lightning fast, and I thought that's the way to do it, because it was really tough to load weekend. It took me a long time to do the weekend load four rounds one at a time, but I mastered it and I got really good at it. And then in reality, there was only a few of us who were really good at it, and it was a huge advantage at matches. We could load and we could load a lot faster than anybody else. And people would actually switch to open or switch to limited to not shoot against us, because there was only a few guys who could load the shotgun. And, then some intelligent person came up with this twins loading thing where they put deuces in, load two at a time, and then somebody came up with a quad load. And that changed everything. It really did. It was.
Oh, yeah.
And I held out until the end of last season. I showed up at the Surefire match in Las Vegas, and I was shooting with Nils Johnson and Daniel Horner. And Daniel pulls out the quad loaders, and I looked at him like, he and Taren were still holding out. And, and I'm like, oh, so you went to the dark side. And then he proceeded to do it really well. And, I was giving Taren a hard time and saying, hey, I think we got to switch. And he was still a little resistant, but I went ahead and got some quad loaders over there right after the season ended, started practicing. And it's a very, very cool way to do it. And it's the learning curve is much, much easier than the traditional weekend load. I practiced about a month and a half, and I went and shot my first match over this past weekend, the 3-Gun Nation Western Regional Championship. And I was the first shooter on the first stage, and happened to be a 40-round all shotgun stage. And it was first time quad loading in a match. And I'd done a lot in my garage, I'd done a lot, on the range training, but this was the first stage, and I ended up winning the stage by about 9 seconds, and never missed a load the whole weekend, and never dropped a shell. I have AP Custom quad loaders that we had to do a ton of running in this match, and the shells stayed where they're supposed to, and, I got them out, got them in the gun. It was very, very interesting. If you want to move on, I can tell you about the shotgun and how that all worked together. So Taren, one of my sponsors, so is Benelli. So I got an M2, and for the weekend load, it was great. Set up just right. Taren just cleaned up the port, put on a tube, did his reliability package. My gun will run 100% all year long. I clean it like twice a year, and it runs 1 ounce loads. So hey, great gun. But to do the quad load, you have to modify the guns. you have to take down the loading port. You have to make it, smooth it out. You have to dip it down into the receiver so you don't have to shove your thumb in the gun. You just run your thumb over the top of it. So I went to work on one of my older Benellis with a file and a Dremel and shooting sparks over the garage and hoping I didn't destroy it. But then, you know, it was like, it was an old gun anyway. So I figured I would just work on it until it was easy to load. And then if it didn't work anymore, then, you know, that, you know, I'd give it to Taryn and we'd try and figure out something. So I kept taking off more and more material off it with a file and the Dremel and try to smooth things out. And I got it to a point where I could load it, and it made it, you know, it was a lot easier than trying to load it without the modifications. And then I started practicing, and it got pretty darn consistent, where I finally went out to the range and I was able to load shot to shot 8 rounds in just under 3 seconds, which was a huge advantage over what I was doing weekend. I was like almost 2 seconds. So
really,
yeah, it was a big advantage.
Jeez.
And the nice thing about the quad load is that you, because I'm doing weekend quads, so I turn the gun over and load with my left hand still. I'm a right hander. But it got cold. It was raining at the match that I was out in the past weekend in Utah. And it's so much easier to do the quad load when it's cold, because all you're doing is you're just holding the shells really hard with your hand. You're not
having
to manipulate them like you were with the weekend load.
Yeah, yeah.
So it made it so much easier to load. Like I said, I never dropped the shell all weekend. I was just really consistent with it. I was very, very excited about it. When I got home, there was a new shotgun waiting for me. Taryn, I had taken my shotgun down to Taryn's place. I had left it with him and his gunsmith, Fred. They went through it. They figured out what I had done to it. They made it better. They did a bunch of internal modifications. They did a bunch of prettying up the gun and making it really smoothed out. Took stuff off the forend as well to help out with the load. And I got that gun yesterday when I came home, and I started playing with it today. And now I'm even faster because that gun is even smoother with the internal modifications they did. And they did some beveling of the trigger guard and like I said, taking stuff off the off the forehand, and I couldn't believe it. I was actually faster today for the first time with a new gun, because it was it was really cool. I can't say enough. Fred and Taryn did an excellent job, and I can tell you this: Taryn was really resistant to switching because he's the definition of old school, and so I gave him a hard time. I finally went down there, and I said, "Let me show you what I'm doing." And we sat there, and I showed him the quad load and made him do some. And he actually picked it up very quickly. He's got some pretty amazing eye-hand coordination, so he figured it out. You know, in about 5 minutes, he was doing it. You know, and getting the rounds in again. That's one of the most important things: just getting them in there the first time. And he was able to do it. And then I kind of saw the light go off in his eye, saying, "You know what? This is going to be an advantage. You know, we need to catch up with the rest of the market." And like I said, they went ahead and really made a nice quad cut. And offer that now as a modification on the guns. And I think it's going to be really, really cool. In addition, you know, slap a 10 or 12 round Nordic Components tube on it, get yourself a nice fiber optic, and, you know, Taryn will do all that stuff, stimple the forend, and put on a extended bolt release. And you've got a gun that's going to run all year, and it's going to be accurate with slugs, because Taryn will zero it with slugs. And you quad load or traditional load, whatever you want to do with the weekend, and it's just a great deal, because I've shot a lot. I've been sponsored by other companies in the past, and I've shot a lot of the gas guns, and you're kind of a slave to the maintenance. And every night, sometimes between stages, you're out there, you know, oiling them up. You're really having to clean them. And this gun, literally, I'll clean it twice a year. I'll clean it at the beginning of the season, and I'll clean it midway through the season. And it just doesn't really get that dirty, because it's an inertia gun, so now the gas is blowing back into the gun.
Right.
So it just runs. And with Taryn's modifications, he changes the recoil spring and lightens the bolt, so now I can run 1 ounce loads. 1 ounce loads at 1,200, and the gun hardly moves. And it's really just a nice piece, because one of the things that kills me is that when gear doesn't run, so it kills your match.
Oh yeah,
and that's what we see, and that's the difference a lot of times between the pros and the guys, the amateurs or the semi pros that, you know, are into it and they're good, but they're not at the top yet. It's just the gear; it's got to run.
Yeah, you know, and I've actually run into that quite a few times myself, and not only is it like it busting in that match, like my story I just told there, but then the next time you don't trust it. And that gets in your head and that messes with you. You're like, I think I fixed it. I replaced the extractor. You know, it should be good to go now. What's going to go wrong? So yeah, I totally understand the reliability.
So when you don't trust it at the end of the day, if you can't trust the gear, then it's going to be in the back of your head, like you say. And when you go to a match, you're going to be like, all right, geez, I hope this thing runs. That I don't want to be thinking about that. I don't want to be thinking about it running. I want to think about my stage plan. I want to think about, you know, okay, if I hold here, it's going to hit the target. Not if I hold here, I hope it goes off, you know. And then, you know, I do practice malfunction clearances with all three weapon systems. I practice running dry and having to do emergency loads in the hopes that I never will have to. But I'm going to have a plan for it, but hopefully I'll never have to do it.
So, speaking of dry emergency reloads, you have an interesting method of loading from the bolt lockback on the shotgun. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, one of the things...
It looks like magic. I explained it. I'm confused.
All right, so one of the things that this whole quad loading ordeal I put myself through is you have to go back now. Now, remember I mentioned those challenges, right? Well, there's always challenges with a shotgun. You can have an unloaded start. You walk up, bolts forward, and you got to pick the gun up and load it, then shoot a course of fire. You can be standing there holding in your hand. The bolt could be locked back, and you have to go. So you got to develop methods for each one of these challenges. And there's a whole bunch of different stuff in here that the match director set up to try and, just to make you crazy. So at the end of the day, one of the challenges is, hey, if the gun runs dry and I've got multiple rounds to shoot, what am I going to do? Now, because now I'm weekend quad loading. I had a great method for when I was weekend, traditional load, but now I'm quad loading. So basically what I'm doing is grabbing the shells, and I'm banging the shells into the side of the gun to hit the bolt release, to close the bolt, because you can't load it without hitting the bolt release. Got to get the bolt closed. So once I hit the bolt release, I then just do my quad load. And then what I'm doing is basically just separating my thumb and forefinger. I'm grabbing the bolt handle, and I'm hitting the button to release the shell at the same time when I pull it back. So it's just two things at once. Basically, just sliding. You take your index finger, wrap around the bolt handle, you put your thumb on the shell release, and then pull back. So it hits them both.
Gotcha. I haven't shot a Benelli, but to just try it out a couple times, and I could not for the life of me figure out how you're doing that. And I watched that video like 100 times. But for anyone who's curious and doesn't know what we're talking about, I'll put a link in the show notes so they can try to figure it out based on your description there.
Good deal. I've got to where I'm shooting like up on my shoulder with the gun completely locked back, doing that load and shooting another one in about 2.5, 2.75 seconds for that four round load. So I'm pretty happy about that because I actually utilized it in the match. Over the weekend, I plan to run dry in one stage, I had a match saver on. We had a slug in it because we had some ridiculous 150 yard slug shots. But I plan to run dry in a different portion where it had just birdshot because of the movement. It got plenty of movement afterwards to load. If I tried to load before that, I was kind of just stopping. So I just ran dry and then did that technique and got, eight rounds and the gun again real quick and kept moving without using the match saver. So it actually really helped me in the match that I was shooting because I was like third overall in this crazy long run up the hill, shoot flying clay, shoot 150-yard slug shot, shoot pistol mayhem, and then run another 20 yards with your slung rifle and shoot out to 200 or 300 yards. So at the end of the day, all those little things that you practice, all those little challenges kind of come together in a stage like that and give you, because you don't have to go, oh, what would I do? You already know. So you just kind of apply those skills.
Nice. Well, Keith, I'm curious about the pistol that you run. Can we cover that briefly? And then I'd like to talk to you about your strategy and technique, and we can finally delve into these 50 challenges you're talking about.
You know, the Akai Custom Guns does my pistols, and Shea Akai there is a great guy, and Shea Horowitz owns Akai Custom Guns, and he's a great guy. He makes some great guns. What I like about Shea is that he's not resting on his laurels. He's making really good guns. He's got top guys out there, Blake Magez, Shane Coley, they're running these guns, they're winning national championships, and he's not resting on his laurels saying, look, I'm making guns that guys are winning with. He continues to innovate. So the 2011 high cap gun that I'm running for three guns in 9mm, it's got a sleeved barrel on it. So he took a regular barrel, made a tungsten sleeve, put it around there to put more weight out at the end of it, and you know, took a lot of weight off internally in the slide. So the gun just shoots amazingly flat. I mean, it's I can double, you know, shoot 12 or 13 splits on targets, you know, out to 20 yards and keep them where I need them. And it's just a really soft, really nice, accurate gun. And it's the key is the reliability for me. I love the fact that it runs all the time. You know, it's great that it's accurate. It's great that it's light, but it's got to run all the time, because every time a gun goes down, you're burning time and you're losing a match. So his guns are ultra reliable. They're tuned to take either both SV or STI mags, depending on what you want to run. So Taren has set up some STI and SVI mags for me with his base pads on, so I can get 23 or 24 in one when I run that gun, and then 9mm, and it's I like a short flat trigger, and so Shea puts those together for me, and a real aggressive grip. It really stimples them, makes them really, really cut into your hand, not, you know, like it's going to damage it or bleed or anything, but it's just real aggressive. So when you cinch down that grip, I'm all about, you know, minimizing the recoil. It's going to move, but you want to minimize the recoil. You want to make sure it doesn't move off target too much, so the next shot you can be shot quickly. So the triggers are good, the guns are reliable, they're accurate. It's really a nice combination. And Shay, I can tell you this, one of the great things about a Kai, you don't have to wait a year to get your gun. There's a lot of big name manufacturers.
That's unheard of.
Yeah, where you order them and you might get one in a year or two. With Shea, you know, he has stuff online in stock, and you can pick ones and buy them right then, or you can ask him, hey, you know, I like Keith's gun. I shot it. He let me shoot it at a match. Because one of the things I like to do is, if anybody wants to shoot my guns, I like to help my sponsors out. I let them shoot them at the matches. At the end of the match, I let guys shoot my guns. And yeah, because I know they're going to run. I know they're good guns. I'm not worried about them burning out or anything. So I let guys try all my stuff. And I tell them, just, you know, call Shea and say, hey, I shot Keith's gun. I like it. And I want one. How long is it going to take? Maybe 30, 60, or 90 days at the most. He's going to get you a gun. And it's going to be just like the one you shot if you wanted, or something different. And they're really, really cool. He made me, he had a concept. We kind of came together for a carry gun, for steel carry guys, or for me in law enforcement.
Okay.
It's a high cap 2011 in 9mm, but it's got about a four inch slide. And, the gun actually, the way they set it up, he had to make a recoil system for it that was a lot different from the traditional one, because it was such a short throw. And he stroked the gun and again made it a sleeved barrel, bull barrel, and the gun it just shoots amazingly soft. And it feels like honestly it's my backup gun for three gun now. So if my other gun for some reason doesn't make it to the match or breaks or anything weird, the sights, because sometimes the sights get broken because you're throwing them down and stuff. I take that one along because I feel comfortable shooting it in a big match.
That's fantastic. And so you said it's your carry gun, and you mentioned your duty gun as well. So do you carry that like at work on your belt?
Well, yeah, I carry it in when I'm doing my. At my job now, I'm our union president, so I don't get the uniform as much. And when I'm not in uniform, I carry it as almost like a concealed carry rig. And it's it holds 18 and 1, 9mm.
Nice.
So I figure I'm pretty good, pretty much covered if I have to use that to defend myself.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that sounds like quite the concealed carry gun. That's awesome.
Yeah, not a bad deal at all.
So, Keith, want to move on a little bit to technique and strategy, and I'm interested to hear about the 50 challenges you're talking about. It sounds like something that's that kind of forms your practice and strategy for a lot of the things you do. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, absolutely, and this is what I base my training classes on. When I go to train, I want to have an idea what I'm going to do before I show up there, because there's a lot of times you do stuff that, you know, you do it because it's fun, you're with your buddies, and it comes down to, hey, this is entertainment. And if I'm training for a match, or I'm training to defend myself, I need to do the things that maybe aren't so fun. Because a lot of times we want to shoot, but we don't really want to manipulate the guns. We don't, you know, it just comes down to, you do stuff that you're good at because you feel good about it. Now, if you do stuff that you're not good at, so you can get better and turn something you're not good into a strength instead of a weakness. It's going to help you overall, whether you're doing it for competition or doing it to protect yourself or somebody else. So what I do is I broke down like the handgun. I found 21 different things that you know you really need to work on, from your balance, stance, and grip, from your unloaded start to your empty chamber start to shooting on the move, and any number of things that you need to do between your weapon manipulation and your shooting and your transition between the guns and three gun. And I said, okay, here's 21 things. Now these are the 21 things I have to master, and I'm going to figure out what's the most efficient way to do it and fastest way to do it on the clock. And being realistic that sometimes you can come up with stuff that's faster and somebody go, oh, hey, I did it this way. And I go, okay, now if it's 10 degrees and it's raining, am I going to be able to do that? Because I want to be able to be realistic about it as well. So there's ways to do certain things that I found that may be faster in a perfect world when they, you know, like a table is perfectly level and you're in your garage, but now you throw a piece of carpet on that table and it's actually now it's a barrel and it's got a bunch of lumps in it and stuff, and you can't, you know, grab your magazines just the way, just so, or set your shells just the way you want them. You have to have a more realistic plan. So that's why I break down these things and I say, okay, look, this will work in any situation. This is any weather. It's one of those movements that, you know, it's not hard to master, but if you do it efficiently, it's very, very quick. And I teach those things. And those are the things that, for me, when I go to a match and I go, okay, I'm going to have an unloaded start here, then I have to run my shotgun dry over here, and I've got to, let's say, shoot some 50-yard poppers with my handgun and then transition to all this paper and do a speed reload. And I go, okay, that's fine, because I know how to do all these things. And I know what techniques I need to use. And I know what I need to see through my sights, because the disciplines, I break them down into shooting, weapon manipulation, and transition. So anytime you're pulling the trigger, you know, what I harp on people is you need to know what the acceptable sight picture is for the target that you're shooting. Because if I'm shooting a 5-yard target, right, that sight picture is pretty loose. But if I'm shooting a 50-yard target with a handgun, that sight picture and that trigger control is totally different. So you need to not only think about it and process, but you need to go out and actually set up a steel target at these different distances, not at 5, but you know, at 10, 12, 15, 20, 25, all the way up to 50, and actually shoot the targets, interact with the targets, figure out how fast you can actually shoot and get that second hit. See what you need to do with the trigger. And then your brain will record those things, and it'll say, okay, this is the speed I can shoot at 25. This is the speed that I can shoot at 50. Because when you're interacting with paper targets that don't react, you need to know what the acceptable sight picture is without getting that feedback. But if you've got that training, that feedback in your head from when you were shooting steel, you will know. You'll know exactly how fast it'll take you for those sights to recover, and how mm-hmm. the trigger should feel when you've got to shoot those paper targets at 35, 45, and 50, or you have to take that 15-yard headshot with a no-shoot. So those are the things that I break down, and those are the things that I teach people and say, hey, when people come to my class, I say, I'm going to show you what and how to train. Okay, so when you're going to get all this information, people take notes, and I say, you have to go back now and take that information and apply it in your training. You can take this as far as you want it, but it comes down to how much effort you're going to put into it.
So when you set up your practice, then how do you structure that? Do you have like a separate time where I'm working on weapons manipulation, separate time I'm working on transitions, and separate time I'm working on sight picture?
How does it work for you? What I do is most of my training is going to be done dry fire, and weapon manipulation is going to be done at home, because you can do tons of stuff. Learning to load the shotgun, learning to manipulate and load the handgun and the rifle, all that stuff should be done off the range. But I mean, it's a waste of time. When you're on the range, you should be doing drills and shooting and putting things together. So what I do is at home, I do all my dry draws, I do my dry loads, I do my shotgun loading, and I really get to where I'm thinking I'm doing good. When I go to my live fire practice, it's to confirm what I'm doing and dry fire is working. So you need to, I can shoot with an airsoft gun and not have any recoil. But when I go to the live fire range, that same technique that I'm using for sight picture and trigger control and on the airsoft gun directly translates over to what I'm doing with my high cap 2011. But I have to add in one more thing, and that's a good balance stance and a grip. So right. again, returns back to the target, so I can shoot another shot. And that's what I'll focus on at the range. I'll set up things where, because I need to manipulate the guns, I need to transition between them, but I also need to shoot them. So I'll set up drills where I shoot each gun, and then I try to flawlessly integrate some transitions between the guns.
So what does your frequency look like as far as dry fire and live fire practice?
What I try to do each day is just do, I always tell myself, do one thing each day that's going to make your shooting better. And
okay.
It doesn't take long. It takes 10 minutes a day, seriously, 10 minutes a day. Do one thing every day to make your shooting better. And that's most of the time it's going to be dry fire. Recently, it's been a lot of that has been spent doing shotgun because I wanted to learn this new quad load. And it paid off a huge benefit to me in the last match I shot. It was great because I'd done it enough to where I was consistent and I was confident in it. And that's what you need to do. And if you seriously, you could go to the range 3 times a week and just shoot like crazy and it wouldn't benefit you all at all in a match. You could go and train in your garage for 10, 15, 20 minutes a day for 6 days and really work some drills and then go to the range and shoot one day live fire. Because I usually shoot one day of live fire a week.
Okay.
And that's where I'm confirming what I've done those other 6 days is working. Because you can't, none of us, I mean, well, no, I shouldn't say none of us. If you're in the AMU or if you're, a full-time range instructor for a big agency, you have tons of, ammo on hand, you could shoot every day, but most of us can't.
Right.
We can't afford to do it. So,
and that was a direct dig at Daniel Horner, right?
No, it's not a dig. I mean,
no,
the guy's 20 years younger than me, and he has all the ammo he wants to shoot, and he's a very, very, very good three gunner. I'll tell you what, I've never been opposed to them having that because I think what they give back to what they give back to the military guys in terms of shaking out the gear, because nothing, to be honest with you, nothing goes through that you can see in the battlefield now without getting shaken out at Benning between the guys there on the AMU and the guys mm-hmm. that buy and develop these weapon systems. Those guys are the ones that shake out all that gear to make sure it works before it hits the battlefield. And they also go out and they train the guys.
They train them.
So, I've never been a hater on that. Of course, we all joke around and say, oh, yeah, you should be good because you go shoot every day. But the bottom line, at the end of the day, you have to go perform at a match. My hat's
Absolutely.
Off to those guys because they go and their mental game is good. And physically, they're in good shape because they're out there training and they do a good job. And all of them represent the military and the Army very, very well. But I do love beating them. I really do.
Yeah, of course, that's always the best. Well, and you got to tip your hat to the the program itself. It seems like it's completely changed the style of shooting that you see from guys coming out of the military these days, as opposed to like when my dad was in the military. So it's completely different, and they're rolling with the times, and it's AMU teaching that.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think it saved lives. I mean, better gear, better training, and we've been at war for over 10 years, and that is something that has really driven the advancements in our warfare stuff. So my hat's off to them.
So Keith, you've spent a ton of time on shotgun. Reloading and loading the shotgun over the break here because you're trying a new load. What is the other area of your game you think you need the most work on?
Well, out here in California, we don't have a lot of long range availability. The range where I go to, we go out to 200, but I got to drive about 4 hours if I want to get anything outside of that. So a lot of my long range stuff is done, basically on the computer trying to figure out where my bullets are going to hit. But luckily with my Swaro, it has a great computer program. If I zero to 200, get the velocity, the bullet weight, it'll tell me where it's going to hit at the other marks on my BDC. And it's pretty darn close. And in the last few years, I've really I've upped my long range game and went to a lot of matches with they'll sprinkle targets out to 400 yards. And I'm still winning.
Yeah.
I won 5 major matches last year. And three of those were out there. We had long range targets and stuff. So that's where I needed to work on that. And a lot of that just came from, making sure your weapon's zeroed, making sure you know where to hold it on your reticle, and making sure that you are holding it steady. So trigger control and, you know, getting, you know, the correct magazine to have a nice footprint on the ground when you go prone, working on different positions if you got to interact with a barricade and go reverse kneel or something. And there's things you need to do to figure out how to hit the target. And before, because I couldn't shoot up past 200, I was just shooting at 200. I wasn't really worried about the other stuff. And, you know, so my training changed a bit, and I focused on, you know, finding a couple places where I could go out and confirm my zero before a match. So if I have to drive 4 hours to go shoot out to, you know, 500-600 yards, I'll go do it and make sure my gun's hitting where it needs to hit. And that way I can focus on that. But the other stuff I really look at improving on is the transitions between the guns, because people mm-hmm. lose tons of time in that.
Yeah,
and you watch people who are at the top of the game, you know, drop a handgun and pick up a rifle, or transition their shotgun and go to their handgun. It's, you know, you're on the next gun in a second and a half, and you're shooting or you're running, and you're getting out, you're getting done, because the matches now are being, you know, I shot 8 stages over the weekend, and first and second was separated by 0.45 seconds.
I saw that. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. So it's,
I mean, yeah. You think of that over 2 days and, you know, all that time, 0.45 seconds. That's incredible.
And these weren't little stages. These were 90-second stages in some cases. Jesus. So, and 150-yard slug shots and 40-round shotgun stage. So it was pretty ridiculous. Me and Rob Romero have had a great time going back and forth with the Three Gun Nation Regional Series. And we've shot head-to-head. In the last match, I beat him by 0.09 over, I think it was 12 stages, and he beat me by 0.45 this time. And so it's great. It's great to have parity.
Oh,
it's great to have pros that are out there, because I know he's training and working hard. He changed his gear over the offseason, got different sponsors, and he's out there working hard. And it was great for me to see, you know, a couple hundred guys show up and me and Rob still, you know, up at the top. So, because it was a totally different kind of match. This was not a Three Gun Nation match. This was something that Ken Nelson and the guys at the facility there in Utah put together. That was at much higher difficult level than we had expected. It was more like the national championship matches, and wasn't as friendly as some of the Three Gun Nation stuff. So when I walked through the first day, and I looked at it, and I thought, wow. This is a level 10 match here. And I thought to myself, I go, if I'm thinking that, what are these poor guys who are shooting their first or second or third match thinking?
Yeah.
You know? So, but we all had fun. I was on a squad with some really good guys. I only knew a couple of them, and we all worked together, and I'm happy to share my plans with the guys. And we shot with Brian Nelson, Ken's son, and he knew a lot about the stages ahead of time, so because he works there, and he was happy to share his ideas with all of us on how to do them.
That's real cool. So I guess this is a good time to delve deeper into the match. So we've just been calling it the match so far, but it was the Three Gun Nation Southwest Regionals. Is that right?
Yeah, Southwest or Western? Three Gun Nation Western.
Or Western, Regional. Okay. Yeah. Western Regional, okay.
Yeah, it was held in Utah, about an hour and a half north of Las Vegas. And the range there is I think it's the Southern Idaho Practical Shooting Center. It's the home of the Tactical Performance Center, and I actually teach classes there in the off season. And it's a very nice facility. It's in St. George, Utah, and that's I didn't know anything about St. George, and I thought, you know, wow, it's going to be in the middle of nowhere, and it turned out to be a really nice little town. Everybody's really nice, and the facility is big. It's really, really big, and they have a lot of real estate to put stuff up in, and they use it. They really use it to make us run around, so that was kind of interesting.
That's awesome.
But it was a very difficult match. They had a lot of interesting challenges. Like I said, we usually won't shoot a slug past about 75 yards. They put one target out at 150, and they had some like 10-inch plates at 50 and 60. So they really pushed the edge of the envelope in terms of what your weapons will do and how the shooters would perform. And it turned out to be, you know, a challenging match, but a lot of fun. We had a really good time. You know, everybody was helping each other figure out the stage plans, because you would shoot a lot with each gun. I think it was 6 of the 8 stages had all 3 guns. 2 of them you had to run your rifle,
wow,
rifle slung, where you shot your shotgun and your pistol and reloaded both of them. So that's a challenge we don't normally do in many matches. So that was unique and kind of exciting at times. A lot of flying clays where you pushed buttons to activate them, which is unusual too. Just interesting target presentations. We had to shoot in a funhouse and go down a slide. yeah, so just kind of crazy stuff. But, you know, I compliment 3A Nation and Ken Nelson and the staff there, because they came up with a match that was going to challenge everybody. And it was, it was a little daunting at times, but we all went there and jumped in the ring and fought it out, and it was good.
I'm just imagining the guy, the weekend warrior, who's like, okay, this year, 2015, my New Year's resolution, I'm going to shoot my first 3-gun match. And then coming up on this, and the way you just described it, it sounds kind of overwhelming for the newer person.
I have to agree. I was, we did a lot of hand holding for some of the new guys, just to say, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. And if you do this, you know, this is the best stage plan. And, I'm thinking, okay, we get done with a stage in, you know, like 75 seconds or 85 seconds. And, we're coaching these other guys, hoping they can get done before they time out at 180 seconds.
Oh, because yeah.
They're very complicated stages. And, you know, again, like you say, it can be overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, on that topic, you see a lot of, you know, mid-range, you know, weekend warrior type shooters at these matches. What is the most common mistake that you see folks make, and how would you recommend they correct it?
Well, I think reliability in the shotgun is huge. I think a lot of people don't take it for as serious as it is. Once your gun goes down, you start going single action with your shotgun, or it's just jammed up, you know, altogether. It's something that it really hurts, and I see people struggling with it at every match. And that's one of the huge things that people need to work on. Get a reliable shotgun that's going to work all the time, and know where your slugs hit. Go out and zero it. If you have to put a rear sight on it, put a rear sight on it, but figure out what you're going to do to make sure you can hit the targets, and make sure if your gun's running, you're in a big advantage these days, because there's
yeah.
so much going on. You shoot a lot of rounds. Again, with your rifle and your pistol, reliability first, and then, you know, make it sexy after that. If you put all the stuff on it, you can do things to it, make it look cool, paint it pink, whatever you got to do, but make sure it runs first. And that's the biggest issue I see with people.
So do you run a rear sight on your shotgun?
I do not. I have Taran bend the magazine tube until it's the front sight zeroed. And then I have I put a little bit a bigger pad on the cheek piece for my shotgun, so when I, again, just like my rifle, when I push my head into it, I push it to the same place on my cheek every time, and then I just have
okay.
to look down the rib to find the front sight, and a big fiber optic with a little triangle on it, and I just, you know, I figured out to, if I do that, the gun is indexed straight, and I can, like I said, I hit 150-yard slug shot over the weekend, so I'm not really worried about the rear sight at that point, and I'll tell you why I do it, a little tip for you and your listeners.
Yeah, tell me.
That rear sight will make you slower on everything else.
Okay, because you're constantly trying to line up the three
yeah,
dots or something
yeah.
like that if you've got fibers.
The shotgun should be indexed, and you should be shooting that front sight. You know, you should shoot the front sight like a bead sight. And FN, I used to run an FN years ago, and they had a flip-up rear sight, which was cool.
Right.
That's good. You flip it down when you're not using it. Flip it up when you need it. And, I made use of that at times when we had to shoot slugs, but most of the time flip it down and just run the front bead, because that will slow you down, because you tend to start trying to line them up. And let's face it, when you shoot birdshot on steel and clays that are, you know, in bay stages, you don't need to line that thing up. You need
no.
to just index it and shoot, and people would take too long to index the things, and it just burns time.
That's good advice. So that's one match out of the way for the season. What else is on your match schedule for the year?
Well, I'll be going with my first professional series match with 3-Gun Nation is in March. Then I'll go on to shoot the Mystery Mountain 3-Gun in Arizona right after that. Then the USPSA Nationals in April. And there's just a whole list of matches throughout the year. But it'll be a good year. I think I'll shoot probably about 15 major matches throughout the year.
Great.
That I got to travel to, and as well as, you know, sprinkling in the training classes here and there.
Now, are these all 3-gun matches, or do you shoot
yes.
any other type of matches? All
3-gun? I'll be honest with you. I got away from the all-pistol matches years ago when I got tendonitis real bad. Or after I made Grandmaster, I had tendonitis real bad from all the loading and the drawing and all that, and it really messed up my arm. And once I got rehabbed, I found 3-gun, and I figured I didn't have to draw as much, and
mm-hmm.
it helped me sustain my shooting career, because I couldn't have performed at the level of a grandmaster in handgun. I would have just kept breaking down my body. So I got away from that and started doing three gun, and I haven't had that problem since.
Well, that's excellent. So are you required by sponsors to attend certain matches, or do you get to choose your own schedule?
Well, you know, I have several sponsors that sponsor, you know, a match here and there, and then they say, hey, we've got a slot for you in this match, we'd like you to shoot it. And there's some that, yeah, you don't want to say no to, because it's their big,
yeah.
It's their match and they're the title sponsor. So you want to make that to be a priority. So I won't say I'd get fired from my sponsor if I didn't show up that match, but I don't think it would be I wouldn't do my due diligence as a sponsor shooter.
Exactly.
If I didn't make every effort to get there. But hey, you know what, if there's a, you know, an event going on that in my personal life that I need to go to, then they'll understand. They have in the past, and you can make arrangements to do other stuff.
Got it. So Keith, you mentioned your training classes. Do you have any other upcoming projects or promotions you'd like to tell us about?
Well, you know, I'm going to be teaching at the Tactical Performance Center this year. And you can go online to tpc.com and take a look at the list of classes we're putting together throughout the year now. I'm very happy to set up classes for people at local clubs. I had a gentleman in Montana call me and hey, we've got 15 guys up here who want to do a class, so I'm going to go there and teach, and we're going to go up to Oregon and teach, and I'll be teaching in Arizona. So if there's clubs out there and guys, you got a group, you want to set up a class, I'm happy to travel and come. So hit me up on Facebook and we can talk, and I'm happy to come out. Like I said, I've got a ton of challenges. I like to do 3-day classes because there's so much material that you can't get it in two. But if 2 days have to happen, then we cut some stuff out and we make it happen for them. And so if anybody wants any training, wants to help, you know, have me come out and help them out, I'm more than happy to do it. Just to hit me up on Facebook.
Excellent. And so Facebook's the best way to get a hold of you on that.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Got one more question I missed in the match section here, but do you shoot local matches? And if so, where do you shoot them at?
I'm lucky enough to be in Northern California, where we have a few really good clubs. Richmond Hotshots, Sac Valley has both a pistol and a 3-gun club, and our Diablo here in Concord. So yeah, I go shoot local matches as much as I can. You know, I found that sometimes it's better to go and train on a weekend day,
right?
Because there's stuff I need to work on right before a match. But I do like hanging out with my buddies. I do like going and seeing the guys that I've grown up shooting with over the last, you know, 15 years at local matches, and hanging out with them and catching up with them. Sometimes I don't get to do as much as I'd like to, but I do like to do it when I can.
Yeah, it's that balance that we were talking about. So, Keith, two final questions for you. One, can you tell me about your most spectacular disqualification?
Okay, so the most embarrassing set of disqualifications.
Awesome.
Yeah, okay, because I got disqualified from the USPSA Multigun Nationals and the USPSA Pistol Nationals a month apart from each other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this was an epic disaster. And it was funny because I figured out afterwards that I had a problem with my sinuses, and they were occluded. They were actually 96% occluded. I didn't know it at the time, but I was taking I'd fly to these matches and my head would get all plugged up, and I wouldn't take pain meds. I'd take antihistamines and decongestants to try and start to breathe.
Uh-huh.
And those things, if you take enough of them, they make you feel bad. You kind of feel loopy. And
yeah.
So at these two matches, I was at a point where I was taking this stuff and then shooting, and it wasn't like a narcotic or anything. It was just enough to make you a little hyper and try and clear your head. And it really wasn't working. I really didn't feel good, and I probably, you know, wasn't performing very well anyway. But I did things that, you know, one time I just went to drop my shotgun in the dump barrel, and I didn't have it up high enough, so the barrel caught on the lip. And I still had it in my hand, but it turned and it pointed up range. You know, I didn't drop it or anything, but hey, once it breaks the 180, especially the USPSA, you're done. So, hey, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
That's it. I was done. I left, and I came back to shoot handgun nationals, and, you know, I was reloading my pistol, and I broke the 180, got disqualified. But, you know, these are two things that you don't want to do. I did them a month apart in two national championships. So when I got back, you know, I finally looked at myself in the mirror and said, why is this happening? And went to the doctor, they said, hey, we don't normally do any surgeries for these things, but we'll check it out. They did a CAT scan, and he said, hey, we're going to do your surgery. And I thought, well, that's good. Why? Whoa. Well, there's 96% of your sinuses are occluded. And I had the surgery. It was a totally miserable experience, but it worked. And the next year, I went out, had the best year of my life, won the $50,000 shoot-off at Three Gun Nation, and because I could breathe and see, and I felt good. And I haven't looked back since.
Well, there you go. Surgically enhanced Keith Garcia, right?
There you go.
Heard it here first. All right, Keith, if you could leave the audience with just one thought or piece of advice, what would it be?
If this is your passion, if this is something you really love to do, just take 10 minutes a day and work on something to make your shooting better. And then after that, once you feel like you've mastered stuff, invite somebody else into the sport and help train them develop their passion. Give them the same advice I gave you and give them a helping hand in getting started.
I love it. That's a great way to end the show. Keith, thank you very much for joining us on the Three Gun Show. I appreciate it.
Dave, I'm glad to be here, and I'd be happy to do it again in the future.
What a great interview. Keith's story of how he got into Three Gun is awesome, and the fact that he came back for more and now plays at the top of the sport is something we all can learn from. Be sure to head on over to the website and check out the show notes at threegunshow.com/episode2. Visit all of Keith's awesome sponsors and look for the link to Keith's Facebook page. Send him a quick message thanking him for being on the show. Now, I mentioned before the show that I am doing a prize giveaway. The prize is what I'm calling a Three Gun Starter Package that consists of a Blade Tech Revolution Double Pistol Magazine Pouch, a Blade Tech Revolution AR Mag Pouch, a Carbon Arms Pinwheel, all with TechLock attachments, and I'm also throwing in 4 P-Mags if they're legal in your state. This is over $200 worth of high-quality kit. It is stuff I use myself and definitely recommend. The idea here is that if you're a new shooter that has 3 guns in a holster, you'll be able to attach all this good stuff to your belt and go attend a 3-gun match. Now I want to give a big thanks to Mark and James at Carbon Arms for participating in this giveaway. You guys are awesome, and I genuinely mean that. Now, to get in on this contest, all you have to do is leave a review in iTunes for the 3-Gun Show, and before you hit submit, take a screen capture and email it to me at dave@threegunshow.com. If you include your address, I'll send you one of the super awesome 3-Gun Show stickers as a thank you. For all the details on the prizes and requirements for the giveaway, go to threegunshow.com/giveaway. Thank you so much for downloading, listening, and subscribing to the show. I'll catch you in the next episode. Another one busts the dust, ow! Another one busts the dust, hey, hey! Another one busts the dust, hey!
Well, if you're going to do April 1st, you want to do like a joke one, and I can tell a bunch of crazy stories that aren't true.
That would be awesome, actually.
Well, you know what? We'd do that, and then somebody would think it was true, and you put it on April 1st, and then, you know, it'd be funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
and they'd be like, yeah, Keith Garcia's a dick. And
exactly. I get enough of that as it is, right?
yeah, I think we all do.